Welcome to the Neurodiverse Love Podcast. I'm Mona, and I was married for 30 years, in that relationship for 32, and we didn't find out we were a neurodiverse couple until our 29th year of marriage. And I've been divorced 5 years, and together we have an amazing adult daughter who's thriving and doing fantastic. And today I have another wonderful guest on the podcast, and I'd like to welcome Dr. Veronica Anderson. Dr. Veronica, welcome to the Neurodiverse Love Podcast.
Thank you so much, Mona, for having me on your show. I'm very delighted to be here, especially in light of some new findings in my own family. And so.
Okay. Well, you know, what's always so interesting is that the more we learn, the more we are able to understand ourselves and our families and the people in our lives that we maybe have had challenges with or we connect with. So you have a very unique story, and I would love if you could share a little bit about yourself and then kind of why you're doing the work that you're doing, because I'm just fascinated by all that you're doing. And I know we're going to have a great discussion, but share a little bit about yourself and why you decided to do the work you're doing.
Well, I started out my career wanting to be a just traditional doctor, because when I was young, I was like, Mom, I want to help people. Maybe I'll be a nurse. She said, well, Ronnie, you're really smart. Why don't you be a doctor? And I'm like, okay, I'll be a doctor. And that was the genesis of me becoming a doctor. In addition to my father, who a very brilliant man. And as I went out into the world, I realized how brilliant that he was. He was an electrical engineer and ended up being the chairman of IEEE Computer Society. So anybody out there who's an electrical engineer, say, I know that. Yes, my father was, I don't know if there's been any sense or what the story is, but the first Black American man to lead that international organization.
Wow, that's fabulous.
Yes. And interestingly, I got an email from him today. My father's brother, my father just died in 2020, pre-pandemic. I'm so happy it was pre-pandemic. But his brother is still alive in his 80s and was the first tenured professor, African-American, in the Department of Economics, Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, and has served as an undersecretary of labor and just all other types of really high achieving posts. From a academic and, you know, public service type of situation. And so I grew up in a family where that it was the norm to be around people like that. And my mother, who also, they both grew up in Philadelphia. My mother was born to her mother when her mother was like 16, and then her mother gave her to another family to be raised. So she was adopted, and my mother is 87 going on 88 now. Back in the day when they did those kind of adoptions, there was no paperwork or anything. It was just you give your child, there's an understanding. And that's how my mother ended up growing up in Philadelphia. The family that she was with was very, 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 and I would say more than this now, because I looked at the type of material accoutrements they had, but let's call it a very middle-class family in a time where that just wasn't common in the African-American community. And so I grew up with these two parents. My mother ended up becoming, she went to school after my sister and I started, I started kindergarten. My mother started college at the same time.
I love that.
And so she ended up graduating and got a master's degree, ended up being a guidance counselor in New Jersey in the Trenton public school system. Because she said, I grew up in the city. I always wanted to work with kids in the city. My mother also ended up being the mayor of our town and also a state assemblywoman for New Jersey. So I came from this family where it was just normal to do things like that. And you know, it's funny because when I talk about my family, I feel like I'm a way underachiever.
I know you're not.
Today, today I was having like my uncle sent me an email and was talking about some of the things that he's done in his life, and I'm like, I better get on the road because I haven't done anything yet. So, you know, to say that, you know, I grew up in a family that pushed education. I am Black American, and as Cornel West would say, post-Negro, mm-hmm. post-Negro meaning somebody who was a descendant of slaves. Mm-hmm. And when I did my DNA, I'm still 89% sub-Saharan African, which is very mm-hmm. unusual for a Black person in America. So this is my beginnings. And I ended up, my mother said, you're really smart. Well, I ended up being admitted to Princeton University, graduated with a degree in psychology, and neuroscience was my concentration, went on to medical school, graduated from medical school with honors, went on to an ophthalmology residency, became an eye surgeon, and actually a super subspecialist, a glaucoma specialist in New York City, and proceeded to be miserable. Right? So what happened is, you know, I did all this nonstop from pre-K through to what I'm telling you, no breaks, no stops, no everything. College was 4 years, medical was 4 years, training, no breaks, even though along the way I had gotten married and had two children. So
wow.
Say, like, driven, but it just seemed normal to me because as I went through all this type of stuff, it wasn't particularly hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would have throw something at the you know, their wherever they're listening at, they would have throw something at it when I say it wasn't particular. I mean, I thought medical school was easy. I thought it was a joke at some time because I'm like, all I have to do is memorize these things and I can read on the test. What's so hard about this? Why are people thinking this is hard?
Well,
obviously, now, you know, I'm saying that because this is what my experience was. But as I went out into the world, I started to realize that I had these abilities that other people didn't have, and it had nothing to do with intelligence.
Right.
What it had to do with is I knew things that there was no logical reason why I should know things about people, about things, about times and places. And later on, when I finally had the courage to admit this to somebody, it was a coach. I told her, I said, you know, I know what's the matter with people. They can just send me a text and I know what's wrong with them. And I can tell them what to do for it too. And so she said, oh my God, you're a medical intuitive. I was like, a what? What's a medical intuitive? And she told me what it was, which if anybody has not heard of a medical intuitive, there are many people who call themselves that now, and there are a lot of doctors who have this ability, but we don't call ourselves it because we're real doctors. And right. Like, you know, I got a degree behind my name. And so even though I can brilliantly diagnose someone in a nanosecond, we want to say it's for logical reasons,
right?
And that we're just very smart, which I tell you from working with different doctors now that a lot of us have this particular ability where we just know. And, you know, when people work around us, they'll know that, how do they know the answer to that? And that's the way I was. And I didn't realize that was what was going on. So on an academic level, I take the test and do well, obviously, right? I could do that for my part of my brain. But on the other side, in a nanosecond, I could tell what was wrong with someone even before getting the whole story and be 100% correct about that. Okay. So yeah. I didn't want to admit that's what was going on when somebody pointed out to me. But then when I started evaluating what was going on in my life and how it had happened, I started realizing even back to medical school, when they tried to, you know, stump the medical students, they couldn't stump me. Because I was reading energy. That's what it is. It's being able to assess energy and use your skills and your capabilities in a whole different way than from your logical mind. So this nicely segments into how we're all put together. Now, let me just, I'm going to fast forward because I have written 4 books. And the last 2 books I wrote with a program called the Authors Incubator. And the head of the Authors Incubator is Dr. Angela Loria. And she is neurodiverse. Okay. Big time neurodiverse, right? And the thing for me about Angela, she just tells it like it is. And now I realize now that's her neurodiversity, because she just doesn't have that filter and no ill intent or anything else. But oh my God, I would watch her be in a room telling it like it is in order to help her clients. And people would just go bananas because she would say something in politically incorrect, let's just say. And people would like want to rip her apart. Now, I just loved it because she was just telling it like it is. And I'm like, I'm going to tell it like it is, person. And so I will tell you, I'm in my second marriage at this point, but in my first marriage, I married my college sweetheart from Princeton. And he used to always tell me that I was like a Mack truck.
Because That's so funny, Dr. Veronica. That's so funny. I hear that a lot from couples, that one says that about the other or something similar. So go ahead.
Like, I'm like, you're like a Mack truck, because something would happen and I would just tell it like it is. I didn't think I was saying anything wrong. I would just open up and say what was on my mind or what was on my head, not meaning to be offensive or anything like that. And then somebody would be pissed, and he would be pissed because it wasn't, you know, respecting, I don't know, the norms of niceties of being in social situations.
That's a good way of putting it. I like
that. And so fast forward to, you know, becoming friends with Angela, and she was, Dr. Loria, she was writing something on her Facebook page about, you know, she writes these, she's a fabulous writer, so writes these long, very involved, very descriptive posts now about neurodiversity and what it feels like and her stories and things like that. And one day she wrote this post about these 10 things to know about people who are neurodiverse. And I was just like, well, I agree with all those 10 things. They sound exactly the way it should be in my world, as far as I'm concerned. And she said to me, why don't you take this little test right here? And I can't even remember which one it was. But as you would have it found, of course, I did not score neurotypical. I did not score neurotypical. And when I think about some of the ways of people like my father, who was very into classical music and into the organ and was really just focused, I mean, reading these engineering books. And I mean, he was a really pleasant guy and everything like this. They call him a gentleman. Like one of my aunts on my mother's side said he was a real gentleman, but he was set aside, and he wasn't like everybody else, especially thinking about, you know, this African-American man who grew up in America. At the time he grew up in America, he just wasn't like the rest of the typical culture. Okay.
He stood out. He stood out for his strengths and his gifts that it sounds like were so different than maybe other people in the neighborhood or in the community.
Yeah. And he grew up with his father died when he was like 3 years old. Mm-hmm. So he grew up in a single parent household and was very poor. And, you know, all the things that you would say might lead to a mess. And that's not what happened to him or his brother. But when I look back at how my father navigated the world, it just wasn't like a lot of other people, right?
Yeah.
And of course, my parents, they're both wonderful people, but difficulty understanding each other. So they ended up divorced when I was 18, actually. So I grew up in a, you know, very middle class, nice environment with 2 parents who treated me well. Atypical story, right? Who were nice people who treated me well.
And so how did they treat each other, if you don't mind me asking? Did you hear them arguing or disagreeing, or were they both kind of more mild-mannered when it came to things that maybe they didn't understand about each other?
I can't say there were lots of large and big arguments. But I definitely know that my mother had a lot of trouble understanding my father.
Mm.
And thought that he should do or be this or that. I remember that. And I don't blame her, because how do you have a construct of the way you think life should be, right, and then you proceed to attempt to make everybody who's around you into that mold. So this is where it comes into how we're all made with the imprinting.
Okay? Yeah. Yeah. So let me just say, first of all, thank you for sharing so much, because I can imagine that a lot of listeners are being taken back to their childhood and to their relatives. And they're like, oh my gosh, part of that sounds like my family. Part of that sounds like, you know, what I experienced. And I think what's so challenging and interesting at the same time is we didn't really know how to talk about neurodiversity, you know, when you and I were growing up. I think I'm a little older than you, but it wasn't something that was talked about in the way it's talked about now. So I had an aunt who was definitely a great aunt, who was definitely autistic, and she was called eccentric. She did some really interesting things. Once almost got arrested for one of those things. But, you know, we called people by not so positive names when their brains were wired differently than the norm, which I don't think there's a norm, but they were wired differently. And so, you know, those folks that were treated like that grew up thinking that they were wrong in their beliefs or the way they did things. And we know now so many of those folks, you know, became adults who either were able to thrive and do amazing things. When we talk about like Steve Jobs, and we talk about Warren Buffett and Bill Gates and Beethoven and Mozart and all kinds of folks, but it wasn't valued. And I think as a society, we need to do more to value everybody's neurotype and everybody's neurology. So there are so many things we're going to talk about, but I want to know if there's anything else that you want to talk about related to how you got to where you are now, because I know your focus now is more about helping people in relationships.
Yeah, I just would say the people out there, you know, I talk to people about, like, you know, how to embrace being the black sheep, because I've never felt like I fit in. Even now, I don't feel like I fit in very many places in my culture, in my community. I think I told you this, but a lot of times I feel like everybody else is going on very slow mode and backwards, because everything is just going too slow for me a lot of the times. And it's so hard to be patient. So, you know, I'm like, can we get going faster here, please?
I feel the same way, Dr. Veronica. I realize I'm now embracing my ADHD traits. You know, when things are going too slow, I get very impatient. It's something that I'm really practicing doing better, and breathing and taking that pause, because not everybody is going to move as fast as we do. So,
and it's interesting you talk about the we and moving fast. And so it's interesting, because how I help people, you're going to laugh, because we're going to talk about this instinct, which the Kolbe index shows us, and yours is so close to mine. It's absolutely amazing.
Oh, that's too funny. Okay. So let me tell the listeners that when Dr. Veronica and I met to talk about what we were going to discuss on the podcast, she asked me to complete, two inventories, and I have, and she hasn't revealed to me what she found after I took them. So she's going to share some of that during this conversation. And the audience knows that I am very, very open, and I have been very, very vulnerable on the podcast, because I feel like my experiences have helped so many, and I just want to continue to share. So let's talk first, before, you know, you can share any of the reveal that you want as we talk, but I'd love for you to share something that was really fascinating to me when we talked, is how you have moved forward on understanding the three parts of the brain.
Perfect.
Right? So I'm just going to say there's conative, which is CONATIVE, which I had never heard of. There's cognitive and there's affective. And I'd love for you to share a little bit about what each means and what, how it might look, you know, in a person's life. And then anything you want to share that you think, anything else you want to share that might be helpful.
Yeah. So it's important for people to understand. So this is all well researched, even though you may have never heard of it before, but some of it I'm sure your audience has heard of because we've all been subject to a lot of it, especially the cognitive. So there are three parts of the mind, which also maps onto the brain. So the mind is this, let's call it, you know, the way you're put together, and I'm going to tell you the three ways, but action happens and all that type of stuff. The brain is that physical structure. And now we can map certain ways of being onto particular parts of the brain, the physical structure of the brain. So I'm not going to go over where the physical structure is, but the mind and the brain have three parts. And there's the cognitive part. This is the part that is celebrated so strongly in Western culture. It has to do with thinking and reasoning. This is where IQ is. And if somebody has a number that's high in this area, we worship them like they are God. Right? We think, oh my God, they're in Mensa.
Right.
Yeah, but let's talk about these other two parts of the brain where there are some other things going on that make life not so simple.
Right.
So that's only one part. Now think about it. If you break it into three, the cognitive is only one third of you, and you can think about it. How many people do you know who are very smart and are not thriving?
What's going on?
All right.
Or
they were supposed to be dumb and they're doing fabulous. I have a friend who I met who has created multi-million dollar companies and never got out of the seventh grade. And I'm just like, how does he do this? And these other people who can take a test up and down can't figure out how to like make money or do all those other things, be in relationships, all those other types of things. Why aren't they charming, right? So cognitive thinking, reasoning, IQ. And then there is the affective, and think about feeling, emotions, personality. The very common assessment that people know about in personality is the DISC.
Mm-hmm.
There's some, all the other ones you probably know are a lot of times are in this area. But then there's this third part of the brain called conative. And the conative is how you do things, how you actually take action when left to be free to who you are, when you're striving to do something. How are you going to do it? So think of the brain as thinking, feeling, and doing. And so we all do differently. And guess what? This is wired into us, how we do from birth. And so there is one assessment called the Kolbe, K-O-L-B-E, which was discovered and named after Kathy Kolbe, who is still alive and in her 80s. And Kathy is the daughter of one of the founders of an IQ test that's very well known. And as she was growing up and watching these IQ tests, because you know these people who develop these things are doing a lot of research. So
right. She's
seeing subjects and seeing scores. So you're like, there's something missing. There's something not being measured. And so she went off to study this and said, it's this other part of the brain that has to do with instinct and how you do. This is your, what we call MO, your modus operandi. Now, when you do this, it's broken up into four parts and you get four numbers. And whenever we give somebody their assessment and their report, and Dr. Mona, I will give you this report. It is 18 pages long, plus have links where you can listen to Kathy Kolbe tell you about yourself too, which is
love it.
Delightful. You'll love this, right? It's just like, oh my God, she knows who I am. I tell you, she knows who you are even more because she's in your type and my type too. And so there's four types. One's called a fact finder, and you can guess what that is. That's a person that wants data, and more data, and how they take action to do anything is the first thing they're going to do is go get as much information as they possibly can. And these are people who can at sometimes get stuck in analysis paralysis. But if you want to know all the facts, you will know people like this in your life, that they know the facts about everything. And whenever it comes time to take an action, they're going to go do research.
Yep.
The people are like, I'm going to do my own research. And yep. Then do their own research, get as many facts. Doesn't mean they're right, because you know, the way the internet's set up, you don't necessarily get the best search engine results, not the most true results.
Right.
So people who are facts finders can be wonderful and maddening, because they can, they're the really the rabbit hole people, because they'll never, they never feel like they have enough information. Never. Yeah. Ever. Now think about this.
Let's pause for 1 second, because I know that a lot of folks that are listening can either relate to this part, or they have a partner or an ex-partner who this was their main focus. And we may talk about this as we, you know, continue our conversation, but one of the things that you said was paralysis analysis. And I hear this a lot from the couples in the support group, that making decisions can be so difficult because they're looking for a place of perfection where they have, you know, all the information possible to get. And now that we have the internet, it's not possible to get all the information that's out there.
You go search something, there's 3 million results or more.
Right. In the days when I was growing up, we had an encyclopedia and some books. So yes, you might be able to do really thorough research in, you know, a short amount of time or a shorter amount of time. That's not possible. So there's no such thing as perfection, no matter how much research you do. And I think there is a happy medium, and couples have to find it. Because if you continue to analyze and collect data, and you and your partner are not able to move forward on decisions, it can create a lot of conflict. So I just wanted to share that, because I hear it over and over again.
And an important piece about doing an index like the Colby is, when you know what your type is and what your partner's type is, and they understand that they are that type of person, they also can put into place systems to cut off the paralysis. Do you see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So they can say, yes, I'm like this. I know I'm like this. It doesn't say stop it, but you're going to put a time and date on it and say it's enough and move forward. Right.
Right.
And then on the other end, there's the people who don't get all the facts and are more limited. You and I fit more towards the,
absolutely,
the other way. I'll tell you. I want to share you at the end. All right.
Okay, yeah.
And then the next type is what's called a follow through. They like to organize. It's the way they organize everything. So these people can be great masters of ceremony, but you'll notice that whenever they do anything, they have to be extraordinarily organized in doing it. And they don't like things to be unorganized and in disarray. So they're going to do things very methodically and be upset when everybody else is not being very methodical about whatever they're doing. That is somebody who is what's called a high follow through. They have a method for everything. But somebody like this, as I said, they may be the person who's the good master of ceremonies, because when a lot's going on, they can get everybody organized and keep the whole situation organized. So somebody who's a high follow through is like that. Now,
go ahead.
My husband is a high follow through like that. He's very methodical and organized. And I'm not. I'm on the other end. Okay.
Yeah. Me too.
But also, you know, it is what it is. When you say follow through, it does talk about doing things to completion. So when I looked at my score and follow through, I was like, how did I really get through medical school? How? Because this, I don't, you would think, you know, high fact finder follow through would be the typical doctor, which they do tend to be the typical doctor. And I'm not that. So I've really been the black sheep everywhere I am. But
well, let's talk for a second about the follow through piece, because again, I think what's so exciting about the conversation we're having and the Colby Index, and a lot of the other, you know, tools out there, is that once you understand where your strengths are and where your gifts are and where your talents are, instead of expecting everybody, especially your partner, to be like you, and I'm raising two hands because I wanted my ex to be more like me. But once you understand what your strengths are and what your partner's strengths are, then you have an opportunity to figure out how to balance each other and work together as a team. I think the greatest challenges I see with neurodiverse couples occur when one partner demands the other be more like them or be exactly like them without appreciating the strengths the other partner brings to the table. And so I just want the listeners to hear that, both the autistic and the non-autistic or neurotypical partners, everybody has strengths and gifts and talents, but the differences can create so much conflict if you don't appreciate and value and learn to understand each other's strengths that are differences. Does that resonate or make sense?
Well, I just got to say that you understand, you're saying neurodiverse couples. Well, these are things that break down all couples, differences. And after I finish this explanation, I'll tell you how you can see where the breakdowns are. But then when you can see where the breakdowns are or could be, then you have tools to be able to understand each other and not have the breakdowns. That's the purpose of doing these. It's right. So that you understand at least. Now, here's the thing. At least one of the partners understands. Because you're thinking, oh my God, I know this great information and I'm going to make my partner. No, if one partner understands, you understand who you are and you understand who the other person in the relationship is, you can only do something or change you. And so your understanding, that means you operate if you want to keep the relationship.
Right.
Understand this type of thing. Sometimes you decide I don't want to keep the relationship. And then that's a whole nother discussion. Okay. Right. So let me recap. First is a fact finder. This is how you gather and share information. And so at the high end and on 1 to 10, where you get towards the 10, those are people who data, and more data. And then on the other end, those are the people who just kind of more wing it. Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then you have the follow through, which is how you organize. Right. And so you have the people who are hyper organized. They're the 7, 8, 9, 10. And then you have the other people who they're not organized. They just adapt to the situation on the lower end. Where do you think you fall on that, Dr. Mona?
I think in my work life, I am extremely focused on follow through. I bring people onto my team when I was working full time who could follow through in areas where I didn't have skills. And so I don't know exactly what number I might be, but I would say that in my personal life, the follow through is different. It depends on if somebody makes me mad or if they're not hearing me, then I'm less apt to follow through, if that makes sense. So.
Gotcha. Okay, so let's go to the third part of this, and that's called a quick start. And this is how you deal with risk and uncertainty. So someone who is a high quick start is somebody who will fire, aim.
That's me.
Okay. Now, they're the innovators, the visionaries. Everybody thinks they want to be like a quick start. They're the risk takers. Their way of doing everything is to innovate and wing it and try it and experiment and see what works. And you're saying, that's me. And I'll say, ding, ding, ding. You're absolutely right.
It's you. Yes, it's me. And Dr. Veronica, I will tell you, it drove my ex-husband crazy because he was the fact finder, more of the fact finder. And I would push, you know, I would say, okay, we're going to do this. And he would look at me like a deer in headlights, like, what are you kidding? You know, we haven't even, you know, looked at this research or whatever. I was ready to buy a car. You know, I only had to look at a few different places and I was ready to pull the trigger. He wanted to look for a month or longer. So yeah, it created a lot of challenges, and I'm sure it does in a lot of other relationships. So I love this. Yeah.
Your way of doing things is to innovate.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then there's this fourth category, which is called implementer. And this is actually a more tangible category. We need implementers because they're the people that actually build things and make sure things actually get done in that. So this is how you handle space and tangibles. And now I'm going to share with you your numbers and tell you what they mean. Now, I'm going to tell you that my numbers are 4, 2, 9, 4. 4 in Fact Finder, 2 in Follow Through, 9 in Quick Start, 4 in Implementer. Remember, we're on a scale from 1 to 10. It doesn't mean a 10 is better or 1 is worse. It's just how you do things. This is how. And 1 to 3, you do things a certain way. 4 to 6, you do things a little bit different. And then 7 to 10, you do things a little bit more extreme in that particular area. Okay. Somebody who's on the opposite end, like you said, yeah, that's me. I'm the innovator. The other end of the quick start is somebody who is the person who restores or retains. And so that those people are very important because they're able to see what needs to stay in place.
Yeah.
And it's important to have people who need to see what's now think about society of those people who want to keep everything the same.
Yeah.
They're probably low on the quick start. That's right. Just like everything should stay the same forever, always. But we have ChatGPT and Bard because there are the quick starts. Okay.
Yeah.
We're like, yeah. go for it. And now they're trying to pull these things back. And I'm like, how dare they try to pull it back? Let's go for it even more.
I know. And I think, Dr. Veronica, I think what is so challenging, especially when I was younger, I knew that I wasn't afraid of change. I wasn't afraid of taking a chance, risking, being an innovator. And my ex and I we started dating at 21 and we married at 23. So I had him by my side as my partner when I would innovate and take these risks and take these chances. And they were usually having to do with my career, right? And so he would be like my biggest cheerleader. And it worked really, really, really well, right? Where it didn't work well is in our personal life. Like I was ready to have a child quickly. He asked that we wait 5 years after we were married. That turned into 9 years. And the reason I share that is I know this can be such a challenge for couples when they don't understand each other's personality and how they make decisions and where they feel most comfortable. So instead of pushing and nagging and fighting back and feeling anger towards him, I could have delved a little bit deeper into that and said, you know, help me understand why you want to wait longer. And I don't think I ever did that.
Well, but he wouldn't have had enough data, and that's what he would have said. And you would have been like, well, what data do you need exactly?
Exactly.
And maybe we could more. And you're being like, what is he analyzing? And he's just like, why is she being so impulsive about this?
Yes, exactly.
Right. Okay. So your numbers are 4, 3, 9, 2. So that makes you what's called an initiating quick start. And when I say we're very alike, I'm a 4, 2, 9, 4. So we are so close. When I saw that, I smiled. I do a fair number of these, and to find other quick starts is always just joyful.
I'm sure.
And a 9 is pretty high.
Kathy
Colby, who actually is the founder of this method, she's a 7 on the quick start.
So,
I mean, now what happens is your initiating area is when you're going to take any type of action, it's what you're going to default to first.
Mm-hmm.
It does not mean you cannot do any of these other areas. You are absolutely able to do it in another way, but it takes a lot more brain energy for you to do it any other way.
Yeah. And see, I think that is so critical for the audience to hear because, you know, I hear often from the non-autistic partner saying, why do I always have to be the one to change? Why do I always have to do this? Why do I always have to do that? You don't. But you can ask your partner to hear what your needs or your wants are. And if they're willing to try to move a little bit towards some of the things you want and need to change in the relationship, you have to understand, and this is something I didn't understand, so I'm raising both hands, it's not going to be at the pace or at the speed that you would do it. So where I could make a decision in 24 hours or less, and then with no regard for the potential risk, move forward, it might take my ex 30 days. And I'm, you know, I lost patience on him, you know, and I'm judging him, and I'm resentful, and I'm angry. And I hear this over and over again. And so if we don't accept our partners, and we don't accept, if we accept ourselves and don't accept our partners, then there's going to be continuous conflict. It's just going to happen.
Yes. So let me just say that the Colby Index is most commonly used in a corporate environment to help people hire and build high performing teams. What we look for, what we want to put together, is what we call cognitive diversity. You want all types on the team. It's been researched and shown that a cognitively diverse team will outperform any other kind of team. Now think about how this could work. If you just have me and Mona on the team, we're going to be innovating all day, and we may never really get anything done.
Right.
Whereas if you have people who are high fact finders on a team, and there are a lot of people who are engineering like that, or fact finders or follow through, like the follow throughs are never going to be organized enough. The fact finders are never going to have enough data. They are the people that can get in the analysis paralysis. So you need both, all of these people on the team, so that they can balance each other out. You do not want all fact finders on the team, or you do not want all innovators on the team. So the reason why a lot of, let's call it, startups will fail is because they have too many fact finders, or too many quick starts. If you're the innovator all the time, you just never stick with something long enough to see it through. If you're the fact finder, you never get it launched, right? Yes. So you need to have, that's in a corporate situation. Now, Colby Corporation will tell you that when asked people, what was the biggest impact that Colby had on you? They do not answer with their job. Now, the big great thing about their job and careers is when you know what other people are, you can put right butts in right seats very easily. Right. This is something that is approved that you can do before hiring, because it's shown not to be biased in the same way as things like DISC and all that other type of stuff. So you can use it ahead of hiring, and they have a program actually called Right Fit, where you do a Colby, what's called a Colby C, because there's an A, B, and a C. I'm talking about the A right now, but you do a Colby C on the job position, and then you have candidates take a Colby A, which is what you had, and you fit the person's Colby with the Colby C, and that way you know that when you hire this person, they're going to be a right fit for the position, so there won't be a lot of misery or expectations that are broken. So that's a corporate thing, but in a relationship,
yeah,
where people say it's most impactful. Why? Because all of a sudden you understand who you are, and you understand who you're dealing with. And it's just like, oh, wow, that's their brain. They were born like that. Now I understand why they are that way. It's all of a sudden you're empathetic and forgiving. And it's like the scales fall off your eyes. Yeah. Right?
Oh, but, I love that. The scales fall off your eyes. Yes.
And it can happen, and it doesn't have to be both partners, as I say. So I said I'm 4294. My husband is 5834. Now, there is potential for conflict when any area is four or more apart. In the area I'm a 2, he's an 8. In the area he's a 3, I'm a 9. That's 6, and 6 apart in both of those. Think about that.
Yeah. Right?
So those are the areas where you're going to realize there is potential for conflict, but then you can pay attention to it and understand, okay, there are things that I can do to get him over the line in this particular area. But we also now understand, he understands my strength is to be the innovator and think of things. Now, you know, now he tries to kind of like put it on me all the time. Right. Right. But I understand, you know, he's more the organizer. When it comes to fact finding, though, we're both, he's a 5 and I'm a 4. We need to have other people help us fact find, because we're not real high on that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then when it comes to implementation, He's a 3 and I'm a 4. So we need other people to help us implement too, right? Yeah. So we looked at each, you can do what's called an A to A. And when I did an A to A, you can do it as a couple, but you can also do it as working together. Because my husband and I work in business together and we have 6 areas that are uncovered. And when we know that, we know we need to always have other people on our team. We are not going to thrive successfully without bringing other people on our team as a business. Now, as a couple, we have to understand our differences, and I understand his follow through, and we can utilize that. He understands my innovation. He used to tell me I was so impulsive. You're just so impulsive. Stick with the plan. Why can't you just? You're so impulsive, right?
Right.
So this is me.
I heard that over and over again too.
Oh my God. And it drives people who are like on that other end.
Yes, crazy.
Because you don't have enough information now.
Right. Exactly.
So those are the 3 parts of the brain. And that when we're talking about this, we're talking about instinct. And this is when I like to also tell people, but there's more to you than just your instinct. There's the 3 I's that kind of make up your way of being. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Okay. Absolutely. So we've got intuition, instinct, and imprinting.
Yeah.
So let's hear a little bit about each one of those.
Talked a lot about what instinct is, and think that's how you take action. You're doing how you do things. And it's wired into you from birth. And Kathy Colby has actually figured out how to test infants and young children in this that can't actually take a test. Okay.
Wow.
Yes. And she's like, you can see this from so very young.
Wow. Isn't that amazing?
Our work at this point is, how do I teach other, you know, practitioners like me to do that same thing? So that's what she's like, really, I got to figure out why? Because we realize, think about this. If you look at our educational system, there's a lot of fact finder follow through in the educational system. So when you get people who are innovators in there, you're going to think that they're just, you know, those are the ADDers.
Right.
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 Because you're impulsive and you can't. If you're a 9, I'm like, when I found out they wanted to call my sons, I'm like, they're just like I am. They're just, this is normal. They're just people who are jealous because we can be like this.
Well, I will tell you, you know, looking back at school, you know, I would volunteer for things, you know, if it was a new book we were reading or a new project, I would volunteer. I loved startups in like that were innovative or new things that we could do. And, you know, I think it was intimidating. My ex used to say to me, you are intimidating. You are intimidating to other people. You are intimidating to your bosses. And now, you know, I'll say to men that I'm dating, you know, I've been told I'm intimidating. And I am, because I know what I want and I'm not afraid to take a risk and I'm not afraid of change. But in a relationship with somebody who is, I won't fully embrace and understand and appreciate and accept and value that part of me, yes, it could be a disaster. So I make sure that that's something I'm looking for in relationships, friendships, or intimate relationships. So so instinct is the first eye.
Yeah. Now, just before we leave instinct, for people who are interested, this is something where it, for somebody who's a fact finder, is absolutely a great tool. And you can actually, we do something called the Glop Shop, where we can pick people who have different Colbys high on each of the numbers and predict what they're going to do in a situation. They're out of the room, then tell them to do something. They all do exactly what was predicted. And so not only are you telling them, here's what a fact finder, you actually demonstrate it with people you've never met, but you know they're Colby. And
right,
people who are fact finders and follow throughs are like sold. Oh my God. Right. I was in one of these demonstrations once in a couples retreat with my husband, and his mouth just dropped open, right? It was a group of entrepreneurs, because, you know, the woman, her name, Shannon Waller, was like saying, okay, this is what Dr. Veronica's going to do. And she, you know, there are 3 other people with me who were high in one of the other numbers. Okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they talked about what I would do. Now, I'm in a room and most of the people in this room are entrepreneurs. Well, guess what? There was high. There was a lot of quick starts. So what started happening is they're laughing because everybody's acting as predicted, but it ended up where, because there were so many quick starts in the room and I just came through and innovated and felt you know, on my feet, really quick thinking, and tied it all up and closed the deal. All the people who were in the entrepreneurs in the room were like almost standing up cheering, because that's exactly how they would do it. They could see themselves doing it exactly how I would do it.
Right.
What happens is when you see this emotion, you're going to say, I would do it just like that person, right? So when I was telling you about this, you're like, that's me. I didn't even need to tell you your number. And you're like, Absolutely. That's me, right?
Yeah. You know, but the thing is, and I want to bring this up because I'm betting some of the listeners are saying this to themselves or to their partner. So many neurodivergent folks have been masking their entire lives. And I think other people do too, but I think it's something that I hear repeatedly from neurodivergent folks. And they may not even know who they really are. So taking or using a tool like this, doing the index.
It's a tool. Can,
yeah, it can help you get in touch with what you feel you've been wanting to do, but may not have done in the past, right? And so the unmasking process for a lot of folks can be challenging because the people that have been in their lives knew them as a masked person. And then they start unmasking to be true to their, you know, their soul, their inner self, you know, who they really are. And then the people that are around them don't even recognize them anymore. So, and I've said this before on the podcast, I think as you begin to understand and know yourself better, whether it's through this index or another tool, be compassionate and have some grace for your partner, your family, your coworkers, your friends, because they only know the person you were before, the masked person. And I think that's so important, because I see relationships over and over again, you know, kind of on the end phase where they're dissolving because the neurodivergent person wants to mask quickly. I've been inauthentic. I've been doing it the neurotypical way for 40, 50 years. I'm never going back there. Just have some grace, you know, for your partners and other people in your life who love you.
Yeah. So yes, this is a tool that can be used, and the beauty of it, you cannot be an evangelist, right? Nobody wants an evangelist, really. Think about it. When the, excuse me if I'm going to offend somebody, but when the Mormon comes and knocks on your door, you're like, really? I don't want to hear about it. So think about, once you have the tool and you know about it, nobody else cares. Yeah. So your information to change your life and you, but understand that it doesn't necessarily change all the people around you or how they act or behave, and they don't care.
Right.
So you use it to work on you and understand how you fit in the world better. And yeah, you may, you know, it's now you're liberated, Dr. Mona, that you know that you're an innovator quick start. You're like, this is how I perform. My brain made this way. So here's the last thing to say about this. Do not make this an excuse for bad behavior.
Amen. Okay. Amen, Dr. Veronica. Okay. Amen.
Now,
so I think we got instinct. What about intuition and imprinting?
Let's talk about imprinting, because this is also a brain situation. And a lot of people have heard on this. There's a critical period where certain things happen in the brain, where there's some changes being laid down and things are changing. In the first about 7 years of your life, you are basically just totally a subconscious mind where everything is being printed onto you from your environment and surroundings. And guess what? When that imprinting happens, it's what feels right and good for you. Mm-hmm. Even when it's something that the world would look at and say, that's dysfunctional. And right. You may even, from a logical standpoint, know it's dysfunctional and you want to be away from it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's imprinted on you, and it's the way that you feel, that your brain, your subconscious is telling you that that's right, because that's what you've been around. So if you look and say, I'm attracted to a certain type of people, Dr. Mona.
Yes, I am. And it stems from my father. I mean, my father, you know, he passed away in 2005. My sister and I now know he was autistic. And so my parents were in a mixed neurotype you know, neurodiverse relationship and never knew it. And I look at the conflict they had, and it was very similar to the conflict my ex and I had, because my mother was much more intuitive and emotional and very spiritual. I mean, they couldn't have been more opposite, but they loved each other.
Yeah. And, you know, people, you're attracted, but you are attracted to people for energetic reasons like this. This imprinting attracts you to a certain type of person. So, for instance, when I look right now at the man that I'm married to, oh boy, his energy feels like my father's energy. I just, sure. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
yes, I do.
I remember when I first took him and he met my father, and they just bonded together like immediately. And it was just so perfect and comfortable. And it felt so comfortable to me. Right. Now I'm very blessed in the fact that they weren't, you know, all these things that are make you horribly functioning in the world and life, right? Because you have people who, you grew up in a family where there are people who have, you know, substance abuse problems, abuse, and just all these other things. Like you're talking about, you know, somebody who's neurodiverse, that would be one of the better things that people could have, I would say,
right,
compared to some of these other issues. If you have been in a relationship where somebody's an alcoholic or a drug addict, and you know, you're looking at, you know, it's wrong, you don't want to be, but it seems like you are always attracted to that type of person and you just can't see it. That is your subconscious mind and your imprinting. Why? Because it feels good and right. It feels right. More good and right than people who aren't like that. And that's what imprinting is all about. And so you need to know that that's there, because you have to understand that somebody else may be better at picking your partner than you are. And then you're going to say, but I'm not attracted to that type of person, because you're attracted. So if you really want to get over this, you have to really just decide, I'm going to do this really differently. I have to do this really differently and see it really differently. So imprinting is something, yes, you can change your subconscious mind, but it does take a lot of work, and you are not going to do this alone.
Okay.
And yeah. You don't change it by removing yourself out of all dating situations and everything like that. You don't change it that way. You have to be in the doing mode, in the action mode, so that then you can course correct. You can't
Amen.
Course correct if you are not taking action. So when I hear people say, I'm working on myself, that's why I'm not doing anything, you are not getting anywhere. That's just the bottom line. And that's what a lot of people, I'm working on myself. No, you're not. You're being scared on the sidelines, because how we learn is by doing and then course correcting. Do, course correct. And a lot of times a course correct is going to happen because you get feedback from somebody who can help you go in the right direction, like Dr. Mona does in these type of situations.
And Dr. Veronica. So here's an example that I want to share with the listeners. And I don't know if I've shared this before. The man that I dated about a year plus after my divorce felt so comfortable, right? And what I realized, and he's a high functioning alcoholic, and he has a quick temper, quick to anger, very volatile. And so what I realized, and he kept asking me, do you think I'm autistic? And I said, I don't know. You know, I hadn't delved deep enough, I think, into what was going on. And then as our relationship continued, I realized he was in so many ways my father. And he was in many ways the complete opposite of my ex-husband. And what I realized is my dad was not an alcoholic, but he was addicted to Valium. He had taken Valium. He used to carry the pills in his pocket, in his khakis. He was a psychologist with a PhD, so he was a doctor. And he popped them regularly, and he smoked 3 packs of cigarettes a day. So he had 2 addictions, Valium and nicotine. And I think he also had some food addictions too. And he was an emotional eater. So I saw this man who had, I'd never met or I'd never dated somebody who was an alcoholic, but in some ways it felt familiar, and his high volatility or anger issues, that was my dad. And I think I had blocked that part of my childhood because my father didn't usually yell at me. He would yell at my sister. He treated her very differently and was very emotionally abusive to her. Hmm. And so I watched this man that I was in love with talk to me this way. And thank goodness I had done some work between divorce and this relationship. And I said, no, not okay. You can't talk to me that way. I said, you know, when you do, I will leave the room. I'll get my car. I'll go somewhere. And he couldn't handle that. He wanted me to stay. He asked me never to leave the room or never to leave the apartment or his condo. And he also, he said, what if I start cussing at you and screaming really loud? What are you going to do? And I'm like, I'm going to leave. And our relationship ended soon after that because I was not going to sit back and let him treat me that way. Yes, it helped him get it out of his system and calm him down. But that imprint didn't have to be the blueprint for my relationships, intimate relationships in the future. And I've never had another partner who was like that. So, yeah. So imprinting can have a real impactful role on your life for sure.
Yeah. And so once you realize that it's there, and now I'm telling you about it, then you can start examining it. But it takes a while to be able to say that's what it is because you're so attracted to it. Oh,
just, absolutely.
This is when you'll make excuses for all the bad behavior because it just feels so good. Oh my gosh, right? It's right. It's hitting a certain part of your brain, right? That really literally is, okay? Right. That's imprinting and it's there and you know about it. And if you were imprinted, we were all imprinted and everything we were imprinted with wasn't good and perfect. So there are imprints of everybody that are not functioning well in them. But this is why we're all here to work on all these things, right?
Amen. Amen. Yeah, so the next one is intuition.
Yes. I talk about intuition in terms of understanding your energy and your spiritual DNA, because there's this other X factor that is outside of our mind that we all say, they're my soulmate. And why do I feel so attached to them? Now, think about it. You have these people that you meet, and it's not only romantic, but in other ways, you'll meet people and you'll just seem to click. I mean, you'll walk into a room and you'll look around and you'll look at people, and all of a sudden you're like, I'm going to talk to him or I'm going to talk to her, even if it's just, you know, a friend to friend. What's going on there? Well, this is where I like to bring in human design. And human design is an energetic system. One of the newer ones now has been getting more press lately. Mm-hmm. That is, let's just call it, I'm going to call it a combination, but this is not a one-to-one mapping. So it has, you know, the astrology and the natal chart. It has I Ching. It has Kabbalah. It has quantum neutrino physics in it. And this gentleman who, you know, whenever you have a spiritual awakening, you have to change your name. His name is Ra. So we all talk about Ra.
Okay.
Had this system downloaded to him back in 1987. And do you understand? It's very interesting how accurate this system is. So we're now in the spiritual realm. And I know, Dr. Mona, you said, I always wanted to go over to the spiritual in my podcast, and we've never done it. So here we're going to do it.
Because yes, I love this.
After I tell people about Colby, for the people who are fact finders and want to go do all their digging and research, I like to introduce human design because once I give people that academic and they're willing to listen to me a little bit more, then they're like, okay, well, we'll see what else you have to say because that's good.
right. And the fact that you're a medical intuitive, which we'll talk about a little bit probably as we talk about the intuition piece, that to me is something that has always fascinated me. I've met a few medical intuitives, you know, in the past. And I just think it's such a gift. And I know maybe there are a lot of people that aren't familiar with it and don't understand it and may criticize it. But I just think you have a major gift, Dr. Veronica. That's just
And let me just say, because people put that medical in front of it, and I'm like, I'm not just a medical intuitive. I'm just an intuitive. I am able to, with a lot of accuracy that's even stunning to myself at times, because I get information and I don't know where it comes from. And I let it come out of my mouth and I'm seeing a person shaking their head and I'm like, I don't even know where that came from. That is not my stuff. Okay.
Right.
And it's even fascinating to me to be in this energetic spiritual world where I can access that information for myself and for other people. And it's very helpful. And it's not something I could Google. It's not something that you can get on any of these assessments or tests. It's a completely different area because it's talking about purpose and destiny and life strategies that what we all need to know. And so I love to say, okay, with this, I'm going to stay high level for people who've never heard of it before. There are five types. So it makes it a little bit simpler than something like astrology, where there's all this going. Now, it is complex, but we start very high level with five types.
And okay.
What type you are after I reveal, okay, I'm going to reveal the types, and then we're going to talk about what Dr. Mona is, and I'll tell you what I am too. So you'll have something to hang your hats on. And then I'm going to tell you about some famous couples, because then you can say, oh my God, that's amazing, right? Because you want to see how can we use this information? Now, the only thing that we need to be able to do a human design is your birth information, date, time, place. Time is important. If you say you want a human design and you don't have the time on your birth certificate, order it and ask specifically for the time. Now, you'll say, some people say, well, I'm adopted or I don't have my birth certificate. There are people who know how to figure out those times. I don't do that. I haven't had the training in that. People who are Vedic astrologers are particularly able to do that very well, who are trained. They can figure out what your birth time is, which is quite interesting.
Wow.
But I'm not trained in that at all and have no interest in doing it. It's okay. So I'm not gonna, you know, go there. But so I'm just, the time is important. Why? Because this has to do with exactly where the planets are. So the place is important and the time is important and the date is important, because the planets are in a certain formation. And if you think people act different when the moon moves, people act differently or are made differently when all the planets are moving. Right now, if you want to shut this off right now because you don't believe any of that, fine. But these things, even the quantum neutrino physics part of it, someone won in 2015 a Nobel Prize over this. So these things that were not proven by science are slowly getting more proof for those of you who are fact finders out there.
And I will tell you, Dr. Veronica, my ex-husband and I were very, very interested in all of this. And on the day our daughter was born, almost 27 years ago, my ex-husband, who is more the fact finder, contacted the astrologer we had been working with and had the astrologer do our daughter's chart. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was one of the first things he did after she was born. And I still have it to this day. So, you know,
it's just, I have a astrologer, you know, he's a friend astrologer, and our conversations always go in and out of this type of stuff because it changes, you know, based on the day and the time of life and the, you know, like I'm in a Saturn return and all this other type of stuff. So let's talk about the five types. There's what's called a generator, and the generator. Now, when we talk about the types, there's really big types, which are energy and non-energy, and the energy types. And these are the people who are the majority of the world, 70% are some type of generator. That means they have what's called a defined, sacral center, defined sacral center. That's what we say it. It's colored in. It's a motor that's just going. And generators are why we get anything done in the world, because they thrive in their work. When they are working in their particular area that they're supposed to be, they can go and go some more. So there are people who are generators, about 35% of the population, and manifesting generators, which means they have a defined throat and it's what's called a motor to the throat. Now, the thing is about the throat, think about your speaking with it. The throat is considered the center of manifesting. So if you have a defined throat, you're able to manifest, but it happens in different ways depending on your overall type. So there are 70% of people are generators, and they are either a pure generator or a manifesting generator with a defined throat. A pure generator doesn't have the motor to the throat. Okay. So energy types make the world run, keep it going. Now, the other 30% are called the non-energy types, and they don't have the defined sacral motor center. It's undefined, it's open. So they don't have that unlimited energy, which means they're meant to do something else. So the other three types are called projectors, manifestors, and reflectors. Now I'm going to go backwards in that. Reflectors have no definition in their chart. They're like a mirror. These are people that can be like a chameleon. You want a reflector on your team because they seem like they can almost do anything. But on the other side, they're mirroring a lot what's going on around them and in the rest of the world. So you could be around somebody that's a reflector, and you may not like them because you're seeing yourself and you don't like you. And this can also happen in people who have very little definition in their chart, like one or two centers. They're very sensitive. So people who are reflectors are very open. They're very sensitive to what's going on in the atmosphere, in the outside world. They're just absorbing information, and they are just these, they're more one with nature. These are people like, you know, I have a friend who's a reflector, and she's always out doing something nature-y, right?
She's on and what trip. What percentage of the population are reflectors?
1%.
Okay.
1%. Okay. Let's go to the manifester. Now, everyone thinks they want to be a manifester. That's with the defined throat, but undefined motor center. These are the people who it seems like they're magical because they can initiate an action and it seems like it just appears and life just goes their way. That's what a manifester seems like. Now, the thing about a manifester is because they can just get things to happen like that, they don't necessarily need other people. And they can seem sometimes rude and inconsiderate. And their aura is actually more repulsive than it is attractive. Now, that's, this is not to say somebody like good or bad. This is like just saying, what does your energy feel like? And so somebody who's a manifester can just feel overwhelming to other people. It's very powerful to be a manifester. I have a coach who's a manifester, and he's of course with that defined throat, he tells it like it is, so he's very good and we all want to listen to what he has to say, but he's also so tell it like it is, he could be very offensive in sometime when he says something, not meaning to be that way.
Right. And what percentage are manifestors?
Manifestors are 8 to 9%.
Okay.
And then the other 20 to 22% of people are what are called projectors. And projectors are what are considered to be the wise guides. And their strategy for life is they have to wait to be asked. They have to wait for recognition and the invitation. And I'll let you guess that why somebody else pitched you to have me on your show. Because yes, I am. And so projectors say, well, how do I get an invitation? Well, you get an introduction through somebody else. I'm a projector. I know about life as a projector. Let me just tell you some other famous projectors that you know. They say for projectors, they have a way of being. And so Princess Di was a projector. Elizabeth was a projector. But Barack and Michelle Obama are projectors. Nelson Mandela, some people, Barbara Streisand, Serena Williams, right? So these are people, they just, if you think about who they are, they just, them just being, think about Princess Di especially, because why did you like her? You just liked her because they have these magnetic auras and they have a quote unquote way of being. A lot of times people call it the it factor. And you're meant to be a guide. You're meant to, but you have to wait for people to ask you and invite you. All right. So if I approach you, my aura becomes repulsive and you will run away and you won't hear me or see me. Now that's why my book is talks about how to be seen and heard, because I know how I can disappear and people won't listen to me. But you have to know, right? Now, let's talk about Mona and what she is. Mona, who is, you're going to laugh at this, you are what's called an emotional generator. So you're a generator, which means you can work. And when your area of work, you're doing it, you are just magnificent and in your zone. Now, one of the, let me tell you two very famous generator people, Oprah, the Dalai Lama. So a lot of times people think, oh God, I'm just the generator. Oh no, it's very powerful. Every type is beautiful. This is what to learn about this. Every type is beautiful. Now, let me just, I'm going to send this over to you. I want to tell you some, there's something you told me about you. When I saw it on the chart, I was just like, Darren, right there. You talked about how you are so emotional. You're an emotional generator. You have a defined emotional center, which means you go up and you go down, and you, so there's waves going on in you, up and down and up and down. And for people who are emotional, it's not bad or good to be emotional. It's just, you need to know that you are, and you have to wait to, for the wave to pass to make any kind of decision or do anything. So when you got wise towards the end of your relationship, you're like, okay, I can't be emotional like this. It's not you can't be emotional. It's just that you can't try to swing other people with your emotions. It might've been that your former husband wasn't emotional, and just you over, people who are emotional can overwhelm people who are not. I do not have a defined emotional center. If you're undefined, those people who are emotional can drive you bananas.
Oh, yeah.
What is going on here? Just calm the F down.
Exactly. And I talk about it on the podcast, or I have talked about it on the podcast. My emotions overwhelmed my ex. And, you know, I said this on a podcast I did recently, that he told me, I think it was during our separation at some point, he says, when we were first together, I had, you know, a bucket of bandwidth for your emotions. And now I have barely a thimble. And of course, you know, I got very upset, and that really hurt me. But now I totally understand it. You know, we were together for 32 years. I'm sorry.
This is the spiritual you, though. You do have that those emotional waves. So now what do you do with that? You understand that they are there.
Right.
And understand you, that other people may not be having those same things. And you're going to have to, as I would say, calm the F down. Right. Exactly. I would say it like that to you, but realize that you're going to have to ride the wave and ride the wave. One thing to do for, if you're this emotional, ride the wave without thinking other people have to go on that wave with you. That's not how it, you ride your own wave. And then when you're done riding your wave, then you have the conversation. So if you're that emotional person, that's really when you don't want to do stuff while you're emotional. You're going to say the wrong thing, do the wrong thing in a heat of either up emotion or down emotion.
Right.
Right.
Absolutely.
Up or down, you are not going to make the right decision. Now, as a generator, the way you need to make decisions based on having a motor center is to ask yourself yes or no questions. So they talk about this thing called motivational interviewing.
Yes.
You ask them how they feel.
I had to learn that in school. Yes.
Okay. Let me just tell you, well, 70% of the population responds to yes or no questions. So 70% of people are going to do crappy with motivational interviewing. It's a bad idea. Okay. Because 70% of people, the best way to get information to them, from them, is to ask them a series of yes or no questions, not open-ended questions. So motivational interviewing, it sounds great in theory, but for somebody who is a generator, 70% of the population is, they're not going to do best that way. And so think about also when you want to get information from yourself, when you want to tap your own intuition. When I tell people, let me teach you how to tap your intuition, you need to ask yourself a yes or no question, and an answer will come to you immediately. Is it, do I want this or do I want that? Is this good? Yes or no? Is this what I'm supposed to be doing? Yes or no? Not how do I feel about this? And especially somebody who's emotional doesn't want to ask themselves how they feel about it.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. This.
Right. Okay. Am I telling you something that you want to know?
Yeah. I mean, I love this because, again, I've done the kind of research. I really tried to look at my role in the end of our marriage, plus my exes, plus our dynamics as a couple. And, you know, it was very important for me to go down that path because I knew I wanted to be in another relationship with a man and I didn't want to make the same mistakes again. So for those out there that are listening, that are thinking, I am no longer with my partner and I want another relationship, you know, these tools can be so helpful, but you know, you have to want to do the work because it isn't easy. It is not easy. So I know that I flooded my ex repeatedly with my emotions, whether they were depressive emotions or they were the innovator who wanted to start things and take a risk. All over the place, he was flooded. I do that with my daughter periodically. And so she and I have had to have conversations about what it is that feels comfortable to her when we're having conversations that get emotional. So she, thank God, is willing to tell me what she needs. And so I am very respectful of that. But, you know, if you aren't open and aren't willing to change and learn and grow and be different with different people, you're, like you said, you're going to have the same challenges over and over again until you learn. And I will tell you, every relationship that I've been in, every man that I've dated has been very different. And I believe that each new man that enters my life teaches me what I want and what I don't want, what I'm most comfortable with, what I have to face that I am not comfortable with. And they give me opportunities to learn and grow. And I think that that's going to be my mission for the rest of my life, to learn and grow.
Okay. So I'm going to give you another piece, and I wasn't going to go on this. You just had this great soliloquy to talk about another piece of the human design that I just don't go into a whole lot, but it's called, and you are what's called, now these have to do with the I Ching and numbers, and they go from 1 to 6.
Okay.
But somebody has just the 1, 2, and 3 are internal, and 4, 5, and 6 are external. Let's put it that way. So 1, 2, and 3 are about yourself. 4, 5, and 6 are about your effect on the rest of the world. And you're a 1-3. You're all about, in your whole life is about you and investigating you. So what did I say about that soliloquy? Because you talked about, that's what you just talked about. You mm-hmm. said, everybody I meet, I'm learning more about myself. That's what you're meant to do based on your design. You are spiritually meant to be here to learn all about you. So everybody you get in the relationship with, you're going to be learning more about you. You're always going to be on that path learning about you because you were spiritually designed to be that way.
Yeah. And I want to be a better person. You know, I want to be a better partner, and I want to be a better mother and a friend, and I'm no longer working for anybody. So, but that was also something that I was doing while I was working.
Yes.
And I know, and this is the thing that I know at 59 years old, not everybody's going to want to do that. And that's okay. It's probably all right. 5%, right?
Only 5% of the population really is going to do this. It's difficult to look at yourself and not run away.
I mean, yeah, it is.
You know, when your partner says something about you, now you're looking back on what your former husband said to you. You're like, he was right about what he said about me, and you hated it, but you're willing to look at it and say, you know what, that was me. And so you've grown because of it and moved to a different place where you will operate differently based on that. But I'm saying to you, your life is, the one is about investigating. So you're an investigator. Here we are in the podcast. You're investigating. Yep. And the 3, martyr, is about experimentation. Now think about that. I also told you, in your human design, you're an innovator. So here it is in your spiritual design too. I mean, I told you in your Colby that you're an innovator with a quick start. But in your spiritual design, part of it is the martyr, the experimenter. Okay.
Yep.
Right.
I chose to be a social worker. I mean, I have 3 degrees in social work. That it just, when I found the field, it just was a perfect fit. I mean, there's nothing else I had ever wanted to do. And I loved every bit of school. So these are, I can't tell you, most of the podcasts last an hour, and I told you we would probably do an hour and a half. This has been absolutely fascinating and enlightening to me, and I hope to the listeners too, because like I told you when we were preparing for the podcast, I have never gone down this path. And I think this is going to resonate with a lot of folks who have felt like this is maybe a side of themselves or in their relationship they want to explore. And so I want to give you an opportunity if there's anything else you want to share, you know, in the next few minutes, but I also want to give you an opportunity to let people know how they get in touch with you, because I think there's going to be a lot of people that are interested.
So one thing, I will let you know a couple of things. So first, if you want to just go on the internet and do your own research and do your own human design, you can do that. I have found there's not a lot of good information to be able to know how to interpret it. Because there's a lot of information on it. And so I say that because on my site, drveronica.com, drveronica.com, you scroll down in the middle and I will do, my team and I will do your body graph and then also send you back videos about your type so that it will explain it to you, tell you here's what it is, but then also tell you how to use it. Right. So I'm very practical, and that's in my human design too. That practical coaching situation is right there. Right. Mm-hmm. And also, let me just say, I'm what's called a splenic projector. That means that I get all my information intuitively in a nanosecond. So think about that. I have other elements in my chart, which are very intuitive, and I'm very right wired. So if you look at me from a spiritual perspective, you will see that I'm supposed to be an intuitive, not necessarily a doctor, although I do have some of the investigator and things like that in there. So think about what I do now and where I came from. I mean, the quick start, who's a splenic projector. If you was like, when people know what that is, right? And you're the generator, who's a quick start, so you can get the job done. And here's the other thing about you. Now you're podcasting, you have this podcast that's extraordinarily popular. Because interestingly, you would think it'd be the opposite of this. Your throat is undefined, which means you are fabulous at amplifying other people's messages. And that's why your podcast is so effective, because wow. You bring other people on and you amplify what they're doing.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And that really is my goal. My goal from the beginning of Neurodiverse Love was to partner with others to increase understanding and acceptance of the strengths, differences, and challenges in neurodiverse relationships. It wasn't about me being the voice. It was about partnering from day one. That's so interesting.
And it's in your spiritual design. So you're definitely on the path, your master path right now. This is about, for people who feel like, I don't know where I am and I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know who I am anymore. Both these tools, a Colby and a human design used together, can help you really have some hard paper data facts to see who you are. And then that allows you to be able to flow better into you, who you are, and not try to, and when you do explain yourself, well, hey, the universe just wanted me to be this way. My brain is wired this way. I was spiritually made this way. No, never excuse for bad behavior, but it allows you to understand yourself. Yeah. And it allows you to understand other people. So just like your former husband was saying, let's get her natal chart done. You get this information and you're just like, oh, wow. So,
yeah.
And it's more, let me just say that I'm just giving you a small piece of this. With all of these, like a human design, we can do a composite chart. I can put you and your partner together. I can put family units together, work units together. And so I love to give the example of King Charles and his two wives. And if you looked at their human design composite charts, you'll be like, okay, Charles and Diana, it was obviously they weren't going to make it. They have one electromagnetic bond only and a lot of compromise. Charles and Camilla, they have 7 electromagnetic bonds. And also, when you look at who the dominance, they're about even on that. And like, I don't even know if they have one compromise channel. They might have 0. You look at the relationships from a spiritual perspective. This is not about who we like or who we don't like. It's not about who we're magnetized towards energetically. It has nothing at all to do with that. This has to do with what's going on based on purpose and destiny and who is going to serve you in your spiritual journey. And Camilla is the person who is better serving Charles and actually does a lot for him that Diana could never do just because the spiritual matchup was not as strong. And if you look at that, you're just like, yeah, it's obvious he was going to be with Camilla.
Wow.
No names with it and look at the chart, you'd be like, which of these couples would you take, this one or that one? You would, not knowing their names, pick the Camilla Charles chart over the Diana and Charles chart.
That's so fascinating. I think that there are going to be a lot of folks that are going to be reaching out and they're going to want to do this. And so the best place for them to contact you is at drveronica.com. Correct. And you can tell that Dr. Veronica is extremely passionate about the work that she's doing, and she's very skilled and knowledgeable. And I look forward to reading the 18 pages that you're going to send me, because, you know, I like to learn.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's going to probably give me some further insight. So I can't thank you enough for being willing to share some of your expertise, some of your personal experience, and just enlightening me and our listeners about things that they may never have thought about exploring. So do you have any last thought or words of wisdom you want to share before we sign off?
Learn who you are and then be it.
Yes, I love that. I love that. So thank you for all the work that you're doing. Thank you for sharing your voice with the world. And I know this is going to be a special episode, and a lot of people are going to be reaching out to you and want to explore this area that you gave me the opportunity to explore.
Thank you, Dr. Mona, my fellow quick start.